a new episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast. This is Mark.
This is Matt.
What is up, dude?
The return is up.
The return.
There's 40 years.
There's only one return, and it's of the Jedi.
That's right.
Fuck them Hobbit motherfuckers.
Unless you have a Taco Bell, then there's a different kind of return.
That's an ultimate return.
That burrito will return, just not, the same way.
No, it will return with some splash and circumstance.
Splash and circumstance.
But yeah, man, it is a, it's a good week, man. I'm a, work wasn't that bad this week. I survived it and had a good weekend so far. And man, we're a few weeks away from Comic-Palooza, which we will be talking the legacy of Indiana Jones for our panel at Comic-Palooza on May 26th, 27th, 28th at the George R. Brown Convention Center here in Houston, Texas. So come out and see us if you're local and want to come to Comic-Palooza. They announced announced the dude that played Namor is going to be there. I'm not even going to try to say his fucking name, but he's going to be there. And I guess that's pretty cool. I'm still, man, like, I know the boys cast, Carl Urban's there, and that's cool. And the cast of Arrow, which are like 20 years old, you know.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm still waiting for like that punch in the gut headliner for the show this year. I don't feel like they have that yet.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
So we'll see if they'll get that punch in the gut headliner. I just feel like Comic-Palooza's missing that so far for their guest announcements this year.
I think so too. And, like, you know, going out and getting like Chris Evans.
Right.
Or something, you know.
Yeah, which probably won't. Well, even though he has been doing cons this year.
Yeah, he went to Dallas.
He did C2E2 in Chicago, and he has done a few this year. So you're right about that. I guess he's not too busy this right now to do a few cons, so it's possible. But, I mean, I'm still not going to pay some ridiculous price for his autograph or a photo.
Yeah. Usually the going rate is like $250 or something.
I've said this before, and the only person that I would pay upwards of $150, $200 for an autograph or photo would be Mark Hamill. That'd probably be it.
Yeah.
You know, if he ever does cons and does the circuit, you know. But that would be it. But yeah, Comic-Palooza is in a couple of weeks or 3 weeks or so away. Man, and I feel like between now and then, I feel like I have a million things going on with middle son finishing up his baseball season and, you know, just a few things going on and my daughter's birthday soon. So, but we'll get there. We will make it to Comic-Palooza. We will be there.
The road is treacherous, but we'll get there.
We won't have any bells and whistles on, but we'll have ourselves. And
that's all we need.
That's all we need. And some podcasting.
And so, Mike.
And it's pretty cool. I do have to say it's pretty cool. Thanks to Kerry Gordon and the support of Ming Chen from AMC's Comic Book Men for supporting podcasting on Comic-Palooza and making it a thing, you know, to give the local podcasters a voice at the show. So I do have to give them some props for that.
Keep it relevant, man.
Yeah. And are we relevant?
I think so. I think we are, man. You know, he definitely knows who we are, you know. And so... Yeah. We're popular among, you know, Ming.
That's right.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, he even, I'll give Ming some props there. He's a good dude. He is a good supporter of podcasting and, you know.
He's got Coral Sword over here, great coffee, pizza, games.
Dude, that was some strong. I remember that night we went there, man. I drank so much fucking coffee, I don't think I slept all night.
Yeah.
I was so wired. I was like, holy shit, what happened to me?
We all had like three cups and stuff.
I was like, why am I drinking coffee at 11 o'clock at night? I'm not going to fucking sleep.
And their pastries are good, too. I would like to go there and get another cookie or brownie and something like that.
You said pastry.
Pastry.
Pasties for your titties.
Pasties.
And, I don't know. Yeah, man, so Comic-Palooza, we shall be there. But before then, man, you know, you, me, we ended up today, 40th anniversary of Return of the Jedi is this May, and, you know, they're having screenings in theaters this weekend throughout the week, so check your local listings to see it. And it looked like it was going to be a miss because it was only at a couple of theaters in Houston, but some more opened up this past week, and somehow you and I ended up at the same screening today. I was on hold waiting to know our baseball schedule, and when the baseball schedule opened up, I was like, well, I'm able to make this time. And so I hope you don't smell that god-awful fart my son ripped during the movie.
Nope.
Man, I smelt it. I was like, dude, and Wyatt's over there laughing. Like, yeah, Dad farted. I'm like, good Lord. And because you were sitting right behind me.
Yeah.
But
maybe the seat absorbed it.
Maybe, man. And but yeah, so we checked in on Return of the Jedi for its 40th anniversary, and it was cool. It was cool seeing on the big screen, even though I've seen it before. I think some things about it are like These repertory screenings now are digital, so that, you know, it loses something being real film, you know.
Yeah.
I think, and they're blasting digital sound, so if you notice, I don't know if you noticed it in theater day, like go see a brand new movie, like a few weeks ago, seeing John Wick, and you can feel the 7.1 throughout the building. With these digitized repertory movies, they're not using full 7.1. You can tell most of the sound is coming from the front of the theater.
Yeah.
You're not getting as much back sound with these digital re-releases.
It's more like stereo.
Yeah, it still sounds good.
Stereo
sound. Yeah, it still sounds good, but it, not as good as a brand new film.
No. Hard to convert that.
Yeah, I also noticed, you know, a movie that's 40 years old and I've seen, you know, thousands of times over the years, you still notice things in it. Like, what is the point in Force Lightning? He just, Emperor Zor snaps Luke. He's like, ah, you will die. And Luke's over there, ah, like electrified. Then he starts breathing, and Emperor talks more shit, and Luke's like, ah, oh, it's not so bad. I might recover. And then Emperor's like, you will die. He shoots him again. Like, it doesn't, like, what does it do?
It's flashy, man.
I know.
It's flashy. It's,
but, like,
it's,
why does the Emperor just choke him or pull out his lightsaber and slice him? Is it just the classic James Bond thing? The villain wants to mess around?
I think so.
It's like, I realize this. I'm like, what's the point in Force Lightning? How come the Force Lightning didn't lock Luke over the shaft and down the hole?
That's true.
Instead, Vader picks him up. No, and he throws the Emperor over. And it's like, why did the Emperor just do that to Luke? It's like, you know, not that I want Luke to die, but you notice those things, you know, sometimes. You're like,
that's true.
Like, why did this just happen?
Maybe he's just being sadistic. He just really wants to draw out this moment because it's the last time he'll have to deal with a threat in the universe. Because the rebellion, in the Emperor's mind, the rebellion's about to be squashed. And then, you know, you might as well just have fun torturing what little life is left out of your competition.
Maybe so. And I'll tell you one thing, too, about Jedi. Jedi is very fast-paced.
It is.
It moves quick for a 2-hour and 15-minute movie.
Yeah.
It's not a lot of small parts in it. You know, as much as Empire is still, I think, without much debate, the best of the Star Wars movies. But, you know, Jedi still might be my favorite just because it has so many fun moments in it, from Luke jumping on the skiff and catching his lightsaber, which, as a kid, that was so awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Or the speeder bike chase. Just so many great moments in Jedi that make it, like, maybe my personal favorite, most fun Star Wars movie. But it was fun watching the big screen. It was the Blu-ray special editions with the ghost of Hayden Christensen at the end, which I understand why they did that. I don't really have a problem with it, but how come Obi-Wan and Yoda are older? And it still bothers me that how come Anakin's not older like Vader was?
Because Anakin died.
I know, I read that theory. Yeah. That was his death. But I'm just like, feels like a bit of disrespect to Sebastian Shaw.
I do think,
you know,
that too.
A little bit.
I could see, you know, if they like tried to put in both, like maybe he appears as Anakin and then, you know, grows old, like ages, like in a Force Ghost and becomes Shaw. I don't know. Maybe that'd be too weird. But you know, you're a Force Ghost, so why not have a couple different forms? Because it's like Yoda came back as a Force Ghost that seemed kind of young and spry in the Rise of Skywalker.
Right. And then, like, too, man, I will always watch Jedi and think this, and I can't help but think, but my God, Carrie Fisher, you look pretty hot in this movie, but you're also caked up on coke so much.
Yeah.
And there are so many scenes. You don't notice until you see on the big screen. You can see it in her eyes where she'll turn and look at Han, and she's fucked up.
Yeah.
You can tell she's fucked up throughout the movie. You know, she was really, you know, there were rumors that she almost got fired from playing Princess Leia and things like that. She was in bad shape in 1982 when they were filming this for the 83 release. I mean, she was fucked up. And you could see it in her eyes on the screen a lot. You could see it in her cheekbones. They put a lot of makeup on her. You can tell.
They give her less to do.
Yeah. You can tell they cover her cheekbones with makeup probably because of her being so out of it.
Yeah.
You can tell. And no disrespect to Carrie at all, because we all love her. It's our princess.
Oh, yes.
But she went through a troubled time in her life where she was pretty bad off, you know?
Yeah.
And it was throughout the filming of this. And, you know, and you can, if you really pay attention, you can see it in some parts. Like, yeah, she's not all the way there in that scene, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it was cool seeing Return of the Jedi on the big screen. I'm glad I took the kids. Wyatt, my middle one, that's his favorite Star Wars movie. And he was like, Dad, the Sarlacc pit was so big. It's awesome. You know, that was kind of his reaction to it. He loved it.
Tatooine's anus.
Yes. And yes. So it was fun stuff, man. I'm glad we did that. I mean, some people, our former co-host, or not former, he's our on leave co-host Long. He said, why would you spend money if you can watch on Disney Plus? Well, it's about the experience, Long.
Yeah.
Okay. You don't understand. Yeah, maybe I spent $26 for, because I had one free ticket, so I had spent $26 to see it, but it's worth it for the experience for the boys to see on the big screen.
Exactly.
And
said,
and
man, it's I saw a classic. That in theaters.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can tell you, you know, and I, you know, responded with this, you know, I still remember my uncle taking me to go see the re-releases, the special edition re-releases in theaters in 97, you know, when I was 11 years old. And, you know, I had seen Star Wars before, you know, on cassette, you know, but it's different. Like you said, it's an experience, seeing it on the big screen. And, you know, I think I was a bigger Star Wars fan after that. I don't think I'd be as big of a Star Wars fan had that not happened, had I not been able to tie that experience, you know, with my uncle in. And, you know, I think, it's, you know, that's what it is. It's an experience.
It's fun. I agree. It's
not the same watching it at home.
It's funny. You know, a couple of years ago when COVID hit and there weren't a lot of things in theaters, and I took Michael to see Empire during its 40th anniversary. And Wyatt, after the movie, he was like, Dad, wouldn't it be cool if a couple of years ago they show A New Hope on big screens? And maybe they will for the 50th anniversary.
Yeah.
And I said, well, what about Empire? And Wyatt's like, no, I just want to see Star Wars. And I think because Wyatt, he's the type of kid, he doesn't like sad stuff and stuff. And the middle part of the saga is kind of dark. So
yeah.
I think from Wyatt's perspective, he'd rather see Star Wars than Empire Strikes Back, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's just how he is, you know? But it was fun, man. And it made me realize something this week as we get into some things we watch besides Jedi. So we're going to go back to Star Wars in a minute. But I blew through season 3 of Star Trek Picard this past weekend, which is rare for me. It usually takes me a couple weeks to watch a show. But, man, this was 10 episodes, and I just got hooked quickly and watched it between last weekend, between Saturday and, like, I think I finished it Monday or Tuesday night.
Nice.
10 episodes. And you can don't even have to watch season 1 or 2 to tell what's going on. But if you grew up watching any of The Next Generation, like I did with my dad or anything, season 3 is, like, the perfect final season for those characters. And it's so good. I mean, it is some of the best 10 episodes of Star Trek you'll ever watch. Well-written story, well-told, exciting, lots of great special effects and space battles and just really well-told Star Trek stuff. And I'm not going to spoil anything about it, but to see the Next Generation cast come back together on screen was, I mean, it choked me up a little bit. I'm not going to lie. It was pretty special to watch. And I've never been a hardcore Trekkie. I'm obviously a Star Wars guy, but I appreciate Trek. My dad watched it a lot, and I watched it with him. So I've watched a lot of it over the years, too. And I just never got really nerdy about it, if that makes sense. But I can appreciate it. And Picard Season 3 is a true love letter to the show and to the fans. And if you have Paramount Plus, very much worth watching. And I don't want to spoil too much because it's still kind of fresh and new. But if you're on the fence about it, and you honestly don't have to watch season 1 and 2, you can go straight to season 3 and appreciate everything that happens. I mean, I think you'll pick up on some things. You, like, most people by now, 20, 30 years after the show aired, know that Picard was once assimilated by the Borg and he was Locutus. If you know that, you know enough. You can figure out the rest that's going on. And it does help if you watch Nemesis, where Data dies, because it might be like, well, why is Data back in this? Well, you know, they explain it, you know, why he's back. So, you know, they do give you a pretty good explanation. But it brings you back to Star Wars a little bit, because one thing I appreciate, I'm fine with the sequels. I don't hate them. They are what they are, right? And I think the sequels, a lot like the prequels, will be more appreciated later on. I really do. But one thing I realized the sequels are missing after watching Return of the Jedi today and seeing Han and Lando and everybody hug at the end of the movie, that's the one thing J.J. Abrams and crew missed out on. Why did we not get a single scene, Matt, where Luke, Han, Leia, Lando, and the droids were on scene at the same time? It would have made the sequels mean so much more. Like, Han and Luke never even see each other again in the sequels.
Yeah.
And I really think that's one thing, after watching Picard and seeing those bring those characters together in Star Trek, the sequels missed out on immensely. They should have brought those original trilogy characters on screen at the same time for one last hurrah. And I think that's where the sequels, I realize now, a few years later, they deeply missed out on that, you know? And And there's nothing we can do about it now.
Yeah.
But I do think they missed out on that opportunity to have those original characters on screen together for one last time.
At least Luke and Leia.
Leia, even though it was hologram Luke.
Oh, yeah.
Or force projected Luke, you know.
Yeah, force projected.
But yeah, you know, it's just like, that's the one missed opportunity. But, you know, it is what it is, I guess, and there's nothing we can do about it. But Picard Season 3, man, I highly recommend it. That's really all I really watched this week, besides our feature film. But hey, that was 10 episodes. That was a lot to watch in 1 week.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a tall order of episodes, man. But I've seen some clips of the Picard Season 3, and there's a little snippet I saw of Data piloting. I think he's piloting the Enterprise, but it looked pretty damn cool. I can definitely see that there's, you know, some good space stuff in that series.
It's not the Enterprise, but it is a ship like that.
Oh, okay.
But I can't say more without, gotcha, really honestly without spoiling it, because I'm telling you, I think, Matt, you appreciate good sci-fi, and I think even you would appreciate what they do with Picard Season 3.
Yeah, so Picard, watch it if you can. I'm probably going to have to watch it myself and check up on it. I did, because we were watching X-Men today, I felt like I wanted to watch more X-Men. So I went ahead and watched The Wolverine, which is good, James Mangold. And I went ahead and watched Days of Future Past.
I think the last 15 minutes are kind of... That's my biggest problem with Wolverine. The last 15 minutes of it are just kind of like... pulling the adamantium out of him and all that. I'm like, wait, what? Like, it was weird. It got weird all of a sudden.
And the Pacific Rim reject in Silver Samurai.
Yeah.
But, yeah. But he does get it on with some chicks. Wolverine, he pulls some chicks.
And the extended version is really good with the big ninja fight in it. Like,
yeah.
Why did they not leave that in the theatrical version? It's so cool, you know?
Well, with the arrows?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was cool. Then, of course, I watched Days of Future Past. And Hugh Jackman works out so much in it, they renamed him Huge Jackman.
Guy, you know what? It's funny, because when watching The Last Stand the other day, getting ready for today's episode, I'm like, we're not going to make it through this episode without Matt making a huge Jackman. And there we are, 17 huge minutes
Jackman,
in.
Jackman, baby.
Matt, bam, hits it with a huge Jackman joke.
He's huge down under.
In the words of Matt, wow.
Wow. Wow. Or
oh.
But yeah.
I'm going to be nice and not call Matt out on the show about his use of the word wow, like I did in text messages the other day.
I know, right? I did neglect to watch X-Men Apocalypse and X-Men First Class and X-Men Origins. I did watch Deadpool, though, which, you know, I feel like it doesn't hold up as well. But, you know, it's got the chick from Firefly in it.
Marina Baccarin.
Yeah, Maria Baccarin.
You know, you can go watch, was it Homeland?
Homeland?
On Showtime, and she shows the goods a few times in that show. Yep.
Whoa. Like home-baked goods?
Goods.
Yeah.
You know, wow, Matt. Wow.
Whoa.
Wow. Now people are going, what? Okay, that's cool. So Matt, in text messages, people, when you send him like stuff that's crazy, his answer is always, wow.
Yep.
So I had to make a joke to him the other day. It's in the group chat, like, wife shows a cooter. Matt says, wow. Wife shows the boobs. Matt says, wow. And Jackie, you're listening to this? Don't kill me. Wife says, Matt, you want some tonight? Wow.
Wow.
So that became the joke with Matt this week. It's maybe not as funny in that context, but it's pretty fucking funny.
I'm actually surprised that he knows that that's what I say. I just, you know, wow. It just conveys much, man.
Well, you're married, so, you know, whenever she does offer it to you, it is kind of like, wow. Wow. You know?
Whoa. Woo, wow, woo,
that hasn't happened in 3 months. Wow.
Wow. The other thing was Scream 6 popped up on my I pre-ordered it, and it popped up, and I went ahead and watched it again. So, boom. Scream 6.
You know, it went to Paramount Plus the same day as its digital release, too.
Don't tell me that.
Yeah, it's on Paramount Plus.
Wow.
It was the same day.
They always are.
Paramount Plus. Well, not always. Paramount did wait on Top Gun. But Paramount's been doing that with most their releases. They're usually same day digital and Paramount Plus releases. There's been a few they haven't done, but they did with Scream, because I was watching Picard the other day, and what did I see on there? Oh, the new Scream movie. I didn't watch it. So
you should. I like Jenna Ortega and the chick that plays Billy Loomis's illegitimate daughter.
Oh, Jenna Ortega.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Those eyes.
She's great in X. You seen X?
I didn't see that.
Yeah, she gets naked, but she don't show anything. But you do see some side boob, I think. If there's some side boob.
That's what it's come to nowadays.
That's right.
Oh, our side boob.
Sometimes side boob can be more interesting.
This episode
you're like,
is totally for
it. Where's the rest of it? You know, I wonder what the rest of it looks like. Is it weird? You know, like 40-year-old virgin shit, you know, when they're talking about, you know, I'm talking about the card table. Man. Whew.
Yeah, where were we?
We're everywhere, man.
Yeah, we're all over the place.
X-Men. Yeah. It's on Disney Plus, all kinds of X-Men stuff. So if you want to watch more Hugh Jackman stuff,
don't worry, Matt. We're going to be talking some Hugh Jackman here in a little bit.
That's right.
It's funny because I did watch. I mean, I don't really always talk about old movies I watch and download this, because I usually try to, or we don't call it download this anymore. But in what we watch, I usually try to talk about newer stuff. But I did watch with the kids The Greatest Showman the other day.
Cool.
You know, I love that movie. I don't know. I just think it's a highly entertaining film. Maybe it's not.
I haven't watched it yet.
You've never seen it?
No.
I mean, maybe it's not a genre that we would ever cover on the show because it's a musical, but it's such an enjoyable, fun musical. I really like that movie. And it just shows you the talents of Hugh Jackman, just how talented he is as an actor and performer. He's just so good. But yeah, that's about all I watched. Picard and Return of the Jedi in theaters. I finished The Bad Batch season one, but I did watch the first episode of season two, but because I stopped to watch Picard, I haven't been able to continue on Bad Batch season two. But that'll probably be this week. You know, now that I finished Picard. All right, let's do a little bit of news. It's mostly trailers. As I was sitting there writing the news down, I was like, man, it's really not much happened this week, but we got some trailers to talk about. But before we get to trailers, one more Star Wars note. On May the 4th, which is of course Star Wars Day, Carrie Fisher will be posthumously given a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
That's awesome.
So that's pretty cool. I was maybe a little surprised she didn't have one. I would have thought Hamill and Harrison Ford, most of the actors already have. I think even Peter Mayhew has one.
Yeah.
And so I was a little surprised that Carrie Fisher did not have one. So she will be getting one.
That's good.
On May the 4th on Star Wars Day.
Crazy that she didn't.
Yeah. And so that's cool. So we got some trailers to talk about. I had forgot this was being made, that they were doing a Twisted Metal TV series with Anthony Mackie based on the video game series. And I guess it's going to be on Peacock. It's going to be a TV series. And,
yeah.
I watched the trailer, and I can't help but think this is a one season and done kind of show.
I'm a little worried, man. I played this game growing up. Me and my cousin were, you know, obsessed with it. You know, and we played every version that came out. He was always Spectre. He liked playing the guy in the Dodge Viper that shoots the heat-seeking missiles basically out of it, and I always liked playing Siren. I think it was called Siren.
I mean,
and she was in the cop car, and she had like this cool taser that would come out and shock you.
I mean, the look of the show, it kind of felt like the game.
It looks like,
but
it just
feels like it's just not something that's gonna, you know. I just still feel like it's not going to cash in well and do well. We'll see.
It looks like it's trying to do like Bullet Train mixed with Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah,
you know, and I think that could be great. I don't trust Peacock right now
right. You know, Anthony Mackie, you know, no disrespect at all. He was great as a Falcon. I think he's going to make a good Captain America. But he's not a household name. Let's just be honest.
I don't think he's a leading guy.
No, he's that guy. Like,
is he the secondary guy?
Yeah. I reckon that. And Captain America: New World Order, I think, is going to be the movie that may push him over the edge, but it's got to be great. But you know, he's just like that guy, and I think that's why Altered Carbon season two didn't work as well, because he just wasn't a known enough name.
You know who I think could do it? Michael B. Jordan, Chadwick Boseman.
Yeah,
you know, it's like those guys. Yeah,
and so we'll see if Twisted Metal is successful for the Peacock Network. We got a new trailer, which strangely did not air today in front of our screening of Return of the Jedi. We got the old trailer, but there is a new trailer out there for Rise of the Beast, the new Transformers film. Mm-hmm. And the new trailer shows that we are finally going to have an on-screen Unicron, which that looked pretty fucking cool.
Yeah.
I have to say that was probably the best part of the trailer. You know, I'm not, we'll see. There's a lot of rumors that this movie's a mess. There's been rumors that test screenings have gone terrible. The editors are in the editing room as we speak with a release in a few weeks, trying to fix this film and make it more watchable. So there's some scary word coming out from test screens of Transformers Rise of the Beast. And I think after the success of Bumblebee and Bumblebee being a good film, that they were really hoping that, you know, Rise of the Beast was going to be another big hit for them. And the strange thing is the Transformers movies are always big hits, even if they're not good.
Yeah.
You know, Last Night, which was terrible, made money in theaters.
Yeah, dude.
So, you know, this could do well. We'll see. But it comes out, you know, the week before The Flash and the week after Spider-Verse. So it's kind of sandwiched in there. It might have a big opening weekend. That's it.
Yeah, it's going to fall off.
I mean, the trailers look cool, but it's like the more I hear about it, it's going to be one of those movies that I might pass on depending on reviews, you know, and just save my money for the next week when The Flash comes out. And that's kind of what it's looking at for me for Rise of the Beast. It sucks. I really want Optimus Prime on screen to be badass.
Yeah, especially first gen, you know? True first gen looking
film, yeah. But that being said, we did get a new trailer for The Flash this past week. And I'm glad they did a good job of not spoiling the film. They just showed us some cool new footage. It looks awesome. I mean, I've been sold on this film already. It had its first big screening at CineCon this past weekend, and the reviews are through the roof. They're saying, believe the hype, this movie really is as good as people say it is. I mean, this is across the board. I read almost nothing negative about The Flash. Everyone's saying that it's just
fantastic. They're saying it's one of the best ever.
Yeah, top comic movies ever made.
Yeah.
It runs about 2.5 hours, they're saying, and they're just saying it's fantastic. They're saying Ezra Miller, it's fantastic in the roles of Flash, that everyone does such a good job seeing Michael Keaton back. I was a little bit, when the trailer, like Ray goes, I didn't feel he needed to say, you want to get nuts. I feel like that's kind of a hokey callback.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it'll see how it is in the context of the actual film. But the trailer, I was like, that's kind of hokey, you know. But it's still badass to see Keaton in the fucking bat suit. I mean, I can't wait. I mean, you know, I'm definitely excited to see that film. And
all the rumors that I've heard and the potential like leak stuff, it's like it sounds. I won't get into it because it's like, you know, who knows if it's true or not. But I'm kind of excited just because all the, you know, stuff that I'm hearing, I'm like, man, you know what? If done right, I think that would be just like legendary if I saw that stuff. So I'm hoping this film is everything, you know, we want it to be. And everything it's hyped up to be, because, man, Keaton as Batman, I mean, we got to do him justice if he's coming back as Batman.
There's a lot of cool fucking toys already. I mean, I was in Target today in the mall, and they have this huge fucking Batwing, man. Like,
oh, hell yeah.
It's gigantic. It's freaking awesome. And I'm like, I was tempted to buy it. But McFarlane's doing one, too. This is from Spin Master. McFarlane's doing a Batwing, and if it's not overly expensive, I'm like, man, I might have to get that.
Yeah,
definitely picking up a Keaton Batman when it comes out for McFarlane. There ain't no doubt about that. But yeah, man, it's cool. I'm kind of excited for The Flash. And I think Warner Brothers is doing a really good job selling the movie. They've been very complacent with what's been going on with Ezra Miller and their recovery from the problems that they faced with the law the last couple of years. And I think that Warner Bros. Is saying the right things, doing the right things. And I think that the movie will speak for itself, that people will forgive Ezra and they'll go see it. It's still going to have their detractors, people that will never forgive Ezra for the things that they did. But if the movie's good and stuff, people will go see it. Because, you know, I think the best thing about the world is sometimes Ezra didn't kill anybody. I mean, there were some rumors that he kidnapped someone, but I don't think that was ever proven. So, you know, I think people can forgive him and go see the movie and enjoy it. He doesn't creep me out like Kevin Spacey does. It's hard sometimes now when you see Kevin Spacey on screen knowing some of the allegations against him. You're like, oh, that's a little weird, you know?
I didn't mention it, but we put on Austin Powers Goldmember, and of course he's in that fake trailer, and my wife's friend's over, and she's like, didn't he do some stuff to, and I was like, yeah, he kind of did. And it kind of just loses its luster seeing him sometimes.
Well, and it's funny because, you know, Bryan Singer had some allegations against him, and it didn't keep me from enjoying Bohemian Rhapsody or his films, but I think it's different when it's a director because they're behind the scenes. It's harder when you see the person on screen. You know,
it's like whenever you see the Weinstein Company pop up, you know, with folks too. You know,
yeah.
It's like,
oh, for sure.
You're like, ah, man, yeah.
Dude, definitely a creep.
But you know, in lieu of that, you know, it doesn't mean that assholes can't make art, and that, you know, or assholes can't, you know, produce art.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of have to look at, you know, the product that's on screen and,
well,
you know, not let that be a, you know, a distraction.
And the best thing about like things like that is like Kevin Smith has said before, and Quentin Tarantino has said before too, we didn't fucking know. Mm-hmm. We were just making movies for this company. We really didn't know because Kevin, like Kevin said, and even Quentin said, if we knew, we would have said something.
Yeah.
We didn't know that Weinstein was doing this. And Kevin and Quentin have both said, hey, we feel bad that his name is on our movies. But to be fair to us, we didn't know.
Yeah.
You know? And they both talked about that. Quentin said, I certainly would have said something. So did Kevin. Kevin's like, I would have said something too. And they just didn't know. So it's weird to see their names on those films, but it was something that happened. So hopefully people forgive Ezra Miller and they go see The Flash. And I think they will. I think the reviews are going to speak for itself.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm very excited to go see The Flash when
it hits theaters. They're everywhere, all over the internet. I think the hype is definitely stewing.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So today's feature film is our final film of the month for our comic movies that don't quite work. And this movie was not directed by Bryan Singer, who directed X-Men and X-Men 2, and he really wanted to come back for this, but scheduling just would not allow it. So he ended up handing the reins over to Brett Ratner, and he did have a little bit of, what do you call it? Advice and input into the film.
Yeah, they had some of the story written. And then whenever he decided he was going to go to
Superman Returns
and take most of the writers from X2 with him and James Marsden, you know, studio is like, who are we going to get? At one point, Darren Aronofsky was going up there because Hugh Jackman had input as part of his new contract with this film. So they considered him.
And he had just done The Fountain, I think, with him.
Yeah, and then Vaughn was the next.
I remember Vaughn was very much attached, and it didn't work out.
They wanted to increase, or, you know, they wanted to push the release date back 3 weeks early, and release it Memorial Weekend. And Vaughn was like, "Well, that seems like too quick of a release date. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I can confidently produce something that quick." So they went to Brett Ratner, who thought that his chances of making a superhero film had, you know, just flew by. You know, no pun intended. He did have his Superman Flyboy, you know, film that was supposed to be part of Warner Brothers axed. And he was considered for the first X-Men film, but they ended up going with Singer, of course. And Ratner trusted the writers to put together the rest of the story for him, and while he focused on directing. And what we got was most of the Cure storyline with the emotional stuff from the Dark Phoenix storyline. Of course, they couldn't go with the cosmic being because that just doesn't kind of work in this scope of the universe. And you kind of get a different X-Men film because of this. There's a little bit of darkness to it, like is present within the first two films, with the Sentinel scene at the beginning. And you do have a sense of that, how mutants have to deal with their mutation at the beginning with Angel, Archangel, or I guess it's just Angel right now.
Yeah.
Where he's trying to file down his wings. And you get, you know, kind of that aspect of it, which they always try and do in every film. But, you know, I feel like this film just didn't pan out because we get all these superheroes suited up on the posters and everything. It's advertised as, you know, this big superhero team up.
The Last Stand.
And, yeah. And we do get a lot of superheroes in this film, and it's the most mutants we've ever seen. But It doesn't lead up to what we were expecting, and just kind of falls short of expectations.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, when I watched it this week, I feel like I can feel the Bryan Singer influence on it for sure.
Yeah,
but I also feel the studio and Brett Ratner's influence too to kind of rush the film. This film is 1 hour and 45 minutes, and it should be at least 2.5 hours
for sure.
Because if you're going to tell the Phoenix story properly, honestly, you need a couple of films to tell that story. You know, because you need to tell the Phoenix saga itself, and then you need to tell the saga where she becomes a Dark Phoenix in a lot of ways. And it just feels the first, to me, watching the first hour of the film, I think, is okay. It's paced well, and then it just gets really rushed. Like, they throw a lot in the last 30 minutes of this film, and it just kind of ends abruptly. You have mutants dying left and right in this movie. You have Cyclops dies at the beginning. Xavier dies 20 minutes into the film, and it's just like, what is going on here? And there's just like, all this stuff is just kind of happening in this film, and you're like, why is it happening so quickly? Because it's just sort of like, it's almost to drive the plot forward, but then you have to stop yourself and say, well, why did that just happen? Oh, because we have to move forward to whatever's going to happen next to the plot.
Exactly. You try and cram so much stuff in, you start losing, you know, quality. I will give them props for having the balls to kill off Cyclops, a seemingly main character, and possibly the next in line to lead the X-Men. Boom, they kill him off.
Yeah.
And there were some behind-the-scenes stuff because of that. He's filming Superman Returns.
Right.
Doesn't have a whole lot of time. And they're trying to... They didn't feel like Cyclops... You know, secondly, they didn't feel like Cyclops could have been that lead guy because his sunglasses, that was the reason. Right. They felt like you couldn't connect optically to him. And that's why they wanted to really go with Wolverine. And it makes sense.
Right.
At this point,
Hugh Jackman had become a huge star.
Yeah.
After the first two X-Men films and some other things he had done, yeah.
And he's got that internal conflict and his reasoning to want to lead the X-Men in this righteous last stand is because of Charles Xavier, Jean Grey, and Cyclops and everything they stood for. He doesn't want them to die for nothing, so he wants to make this last stand to keep their, you know, their legacy and philosophy alive.
Right, and then I did notice, too, that to save money, you know, they gave Major Logan had the Wolverine hair the first two films, and they don't really care in this film.
Yeah.
His hair's just sort of there. He's just got a scruffy beard. He just looks like a regular guy.
Uh-huh.
He doesn't quite have that Wolverine look in his hair like he did in the first two films.
No, he
didn't. I noticed that. Yeah, I think this is a victim of very similar to Daredevil and Green Lantern and a couple of films we did this month of the case of too many comic stories being crammed into one film for sure. And then, like, Magneto is kind of doing his thing as usual, wanting the ultimate power, the ultimate race. But the Magneto from the first two films, to me, would not have been so naive to realize he could control Phoenix. And they kind of made him a little more naive in this film.
Yeah.
You know, to me, it seems like he would have wanted to save Charles. He would have wanted to team up to stop her. And I don't really like the character change they made in Magneto in this film. It just didn't feel like the same Magneto from the first two. In my eyes, anyway, you know.
Yeah.
And then Magneto surrounds himself with a bunch of little pugly little kid mutants. They're all kind of annoying.
Yeah, they
are. It's like, which could have been better.
Calypso.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
who was supposed to play Stacy X, the mutant prostitute, but I guess, you know, he said no to hoes and, you know, made her Calypso.
And then, they threw a lot of that kind of stuff in there. The whole Cure storyline. I feel like the Phoenix storyline's enough. You don't need the Cure storyline on top of it. So it throws in this added thing in there which it just sort of also just kind of happens.
And the reason for that is because they felt they needed that to give the X-Men more conflict with Magneto. That was the whole purpose of it. But like you said, way too much going on.
And then
on.
How about
stick with one.
The moving of San Francisco's Golden Gate Bridge for what? Just to have this epic special effects scene, like, I'm Magneto, I'm going to move a bridge.
And to give him another line, Charles Xavier always wanted me to build bridges.
I know.
They give him the coolest lines, though.
But there's absolutely no point to move the bridge. He could have just flown his whole crew to the Alcatraz Island, which I guess is where it's supposed to be, where the facility is, and dropped them in there and did their thing.
In chess, the pawns go first.
Yeah. And So it's like this elaborate special effects sequence for no reason.
That was actually supposed to be done in the middle of the film. But, you know, of course, them trying to get this film just together, edited, and released on time, that ended up being part of the climax.
Yeah,
which I don't know how much of a difference
I've never made. Read about there being... Brett Ratner has never said much if there's a longer cut of this film, but it feels like there's so much missing from this movie that could have added to the story and made it a longer cut. Because it's just so ridiculously rushed in parts of it.
Yeah.
The Phoenix storyline, which seems like it's supposed to be so important to this movie, almost feels like a throwaway at times. Then all of a sudden, at the end of the film, Jean Grey, Phoenix, rises up, and she's all like, I'm going to destroy everybody. And after just standing next to Magneto for half the battle, and then Wolverine's like, I'm the only one that can stop her. And he walks up the little mountain with his skin getting ripped off, and he keeps healing. And
yeah.
He's like, I love you. And she goes, then do what you have to do. And he stabs her and kills her. And it's just like, really? That's it? You know, just like, I would have, man, there's just so much. As an X-Men fan, I would have done so much different in this movie.
Yeah.
The whole focus would have been Phoenix and her powers. I would never have the cure thing in it. I would have never had Magneto trying to control her. I would have had Magneto realizing, like, hey, I have to work with the X-Men to stop her. You know, and that would have been my focus of this movie. I would not have had the little silly subplots with Iceman and Pyro and their little man-to-man who's got the bigger nutsack battle.
Yeah, and then
all that stuff.
You've got this weird love triangle between Rogue, Kitty, and Iceman.
Right.
And he's being such a player, man. At Charles's funeral, he's sitting in between both of them.
I know, right?
I'm like, why are they sitting next to
Little did he know that Ellen Page was going the other way in the theaters.
That's right. That's not a woman, baby. That's a man.
Oh. I'm wrong for that, but sorry, not sorry. Yeah. You know, I'm like, geez.
Too easy of an Austin
Powers. I was doing research for this movie, and I forgot. I'm like, who the fuck? I really, for a moment, said, who the fuck's Elliot Page? I'm like, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
She's no longer a woman.
There is no more Ellen Page.
She's now Elliot. But yet, she played a pregnant woman in Juno. It's so weird.
I don't get it.
Yeah. It's strange. But that's... The world we live in.
That's what it is. What it is, baby. It is what it is. You can
get your vagina turned into a penis.
Kind of like you know, one of those balloon animals. You know.
And then they have Juggernaut in this film, and he, you know, there's no even mention. There's not even a mention that he's Magneto's brother, like in the comics.
Oh yeah.
And he's just this big stupid guy played by, well, I can't remember the actor's name. He's been in a lot of stuff.
Yeah, he's a character.
In fact, he might be in a movie we're doing. He's in a movie we're doing a couple weeks from now.
He wasn't Gone in 60 Seconds.
Yeah, he's been in a lot of stuff. He's always
classic tough guy. You know.
And he just runs through the building. I'm the Juggernaut, bitch. And he runs into the wall and knocks himself out. I'm like, wow, that was freaking stupid. You hire Ben Foster to play Angel, who's a fucking great actor.
Yes.
And you give him nothing to do.
Nothing.
You know, he saves his dad
at the
end of the movie, and that's it.
He doesn't even fight with the X-Men.
No. And well, the whole trilogy, to be fair, disrespects the original X-Men in some ways. You know, you don't really get much look at Beast until this one, who's played.
There's a short cameo in the second
two,
one.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't realize it until I was doing a little research for this film.
And Kelsey Grammer is actually good as Beast. And it's interesting. Kelsey Grammer never really
auditioned. Singer casted him
before he never auditioned for films, really. Kelsey Grammer wasn't. He was more of a TV guy, as we know. He plays Frasier. And and he didn't. But he really wanted to be in this. And Bryan Singer's like, well, you got to audition. He's like, okay, audition. And he normally doesn't audition for stuff. And he auditioned well, and Singer hired him before the movie was even ready to go. You know, and Singer was still on the project before he dropped off. And Kelsey's actually pretty good in the movie as
Beast. Beast is such a smart X-Men. He's a smart mutant.
Yeah.
And I think Kelsey Grammer, that's what he does the best, is bring that aspect of Beast to the role. That smart guy, that intellectual guy. And that's what he does the best.
Yeah.
You know, aside from his little cheesy line, there comes a time when every man should... Well, yeah, you get the point. Fighting.
And the whole, you know, for a superhero movie, I do think, even though it feels rushed, I think it's well acted. Hugh Jackman does a good job, as he always does, Wolverine.
They're bringing it.
Ian McKellen is good. I think the only actor, I'm sorry, but to me, all three films, Halle Berry just, and she felt like she was sleeping through Storm through all the movies. She's always bothered me as Storm. Not that she's not a capable actress, I just never bought her as Storm. And even in this one, it just feels like she's just kind of going through the motions in the movie.
Yeah.
You know, she,
trying to look pretty.
Yeah.
Stuff. Yeah.
You know, and but he was great. Famke Janssen, however you say her name, she's great as Jean Grey.
Yes.
And so there is, and there's some great set pieces in this film too. The danger room scene is cool. The attack, the battle at the end is cool, even though it's like kind of weird how they move the bridge and all that. It's a good fight.
Juggernaut busting through the walls chasing Kitty is iconic, even yeah. though it's, you know, it's kind of cheesy, his little line, you know, but I always thought that was cool. And then he runs into the wall because he comes up on Leech,
right?
Who is the mutant with the cure.
Yeah.
And he runs into the wall and knocks his head, and then knocks himself out.
And then Magneto, of course, gets the cure put into him.
And which is poetic because Mystique took the darts for right. him, and she turns into Rebecca Romijn Stamos right. somehow.
And then then the continuity becomes a mess because they make First Class, which is like an origin story, but then they do Days of Future Past, and all of a sudden Magneto has powers again, and it's like, wait, what's going on here?
Post-credit scenes
make it look like his powers are coming back.
It looks like they're coming back, like it's not permanent.
And then
Charles Xavier is, you know,
right.
You know, he transfers his conscience into
it. Right, he's resurrected, and then Rebecca Romijn Stamos becomes Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah.
And so the X-Men continuity, and Days of Future Past and First Class are both great movies. I like those two a lot. Two of my favorite X-Men movies, but the continuity does become a little bit of a mess after this one.
Yeah.
As they tried to do a soft boot within the saga of the X-Men films. It's basically what they did with First Class and Days of Future Past. And we won't even talk about Apocalypse or Phoenix because, those are whole nother stories.
I love Days of Future Past when Jackman's like, he's like, of course, I've slept with her many times, but not me. I just got here. Yeah. That's the other guy.
But I'm
from the future.
I do like those two films though. And First Class is remarkably actually very good considering Jackman wasn't in it. It's still a really good film.
Yeah.
And I always, man, I really.
Oh, he was in a cameo.
He's in a cameo, but
fuck off.
I always want to see Matthew Vaughn do another superhero movie. You know, he did Kick Ass and he did X-Men First Class, and I always wanted to see him. He went on to make the Kingsman movies, and I'm like, you're better than this, Matthew Vaughn.
Yeah.
You know, I would love to see him come back and do a superhero film. But, you know, X-Men The Last Stand is, out of the four comic movies we covered for comic movies that didn't quite work, I do think this might be the best of the four. It's still a pretty good X-Men film. It's not as good as, and then part of the problem is, too, it's following up two, and two is still one of the best X-Men films.
Yeah.
And it's so well done that it's hard to follow that up.
It's really
the I'm main, not even sure Singer could have followed it up as well, you know? Yeah.
The main reason why it, you know, is a failure is because it just didn't live up to expectations.
Right.
You have all this hype, and at the end, instead of the big X-Men team that you were looking forward to getting, you get a team of, you know, no Nightcrawler, no Cyclops.
And Nightcrawler was cut because of budget restraints.
Yeah.
They don't want to spend the money.
They want to spend the money.
Yeah.
So I guess only have money in the budget for one
But yet, guy. This still was one of the most expensive comic movies made at the time, even though they cut him out of the film.
There was the idea. They had written it in to have Gambit, one of the people that they release from the truck, which of course, you know, if you didn't realize this, Magneto made the truck flipping thing cool before the Joker did.
Right.
You know, Magneto flipped the truck first.
The movie did well at the box, $234 million at the box
office. It made money. They didn't want to have Gambit pop out of one of those cases because they didn't feel like the reasoning was they didn't feel like introducing an iconic character at that point in the film. I guess they felt like they had to do more with him. But the idea was that they'd have him at one point, and he would just join the X-Men and not join the Brotherhood.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting. And if you bought the DVD for The Last Stand, you had to pick a side, you know, at the beginning of the DVD selection. You could choose the X-Men or the Brotherhood. And if you chose the Brotherhood, it still played the same movie, you know, of course. But it just said, oh, welcome to the Brotherhood.
I have it on Blu-ray. I don't know if it does on the Blu-ray or not.
A lot of marketing in this. A lot of marketing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, but I mean, that was the thing. I mean, marketing is still a thing for films. But, you know,
yeah.
X-Men The Last Stand, I wonder if Singer would have made it any better. I think Singer definitely would have made it longer and a little more epic. And Singer, his he even mentioned in comments that his if he had done the film the fully way he wanted, he did mention that he would have focused more on the Phoenix story than the Cure story.
Yeah.
He has said that before.
The rumor was that he was going to have Sigourney Weaver play Emma Frost.
Yeah.
To kind of mess with her mind, to you know, bring that, get her to kill herself and become the Phoenix.
Yeah. So, you know, it might have been a different film. And, of course, Singer came back to do Days of Future Past in a couple of years after this, or a few years. Did he do... No, he didn't do Apocalypse. That was the writer of the X-Men took over for Apocalypse.
Oh, yeah.
Sinberg or Simon, whatever. But you know, the X-Men films that we have, I think, are some of the better of the Marvel Legend films overall. Yeah. And eventually we'll one day hopefully get to see the X-Men in the MCU. It's headed that direction, I think, at some point. I'm starting to get my gut feeling tells me we might get some mutants introduced during the multiverse saga.
I think so.
But I don't think we're going to get full on X-Men until the next saga. I'm starting to think that, you know. There's already rumors that there's a Galacticus Easter egg in the post-credits for Guardians of the Galaxy 3.
Ooh.
So I have a feeling we're going to get Kang. Obviously, it's the big bad in the multiverse saga. And I think they're going to save Galacticus for saga number 3, which will bring in the Fantastic Four and the X-Men and all that. So we'll see how we go forward with the MCU as far as introducing mutants. But, you know, it was a good month of movies, covering some comic movies that didn't quite work. We found some things that we realized that were a little enjoyable about some of these movies.
Yeah.
And we also found some that maybe things we didn't like or would have done differently.
Yeah.
I don't think any of the four films are terrible films.
No, they're watchable.
Yeah. You know? And it's cool that you saw Spawn for the first time.
Yeah, that was interesting.
I did really enjoy rewatching Daredevil because I'm a big fan of the character. And while it's not the Daredevil movie I would have wanted, I'm grateful that I did get a great Daredevil series on Netflix a few years later. And I'm still holding out hope one day that I get a really good Green Lantern film on screen, and even maybe a good Spawn film one day, you know. And we've had some good X-Men films. I can't knock the X-Men.
I think Spawn is definitely one of those movies where you need to do a remake, and it definitely constitutes a remake. Not some of these other films where they try and take a good film and rehash it.
Right.
Take the bad film, the one that screwed up.
And you know has potential.
Make it do it justice. Right. You know, Spawn has potential.
Yeah.
If done right.
Absolutely. And we'll see. We'll go from there. But we are now done with our April comic book theme month. And we move forward as we get ready for Compalooza and our 350th episode and some good stuff coming up. And the first of those movies we're going to do on our run towards Compalooza and episode 350. We've never done this before. We've never done a Netflix film.
Yeah.
And this is not... I don't even know if this film was made for Netflix or more. It was just bought by Netflix to air. And that is the martial arts ultra-violent extravaganza called The Night Comes for Us.
3 tahun gue jadi mesin pembunuh mereka. Gak kehitung pembantahan yang udah gue lakuin. Kalau lo sudah dilantik menjadi seorang sixes, hukumnya mutlak. Jangan pernah mengampuni. Tapi di saat itulah gue melihat. Satu kehidupan kecil yang sudah di ujung tanduk. Mungkin aja. Gue bisa merubah taktis gue.
Gue gak ngira akan berakhir kayak gini tuh.
Apa yang gue lakuin sekarang?
Ya harusnya gue lakuin dari dulu.
Berani banget lo ngomong kayak gitu.
Mending lo siap-siap sekarang.
Sekarang.
And you haven't seen this yet, have you?
I have not.
It's brutal, man. Don't let the kids be in the room. I'm telling you that. It is brutal film. It starts and it doesn't stop. This is like
this is the raid, right?
This is like the raid on crack, yeah. Man.
Wow, raid on crack.
It's not as, I will be honest, it's not as good story-wise as the raid was, but action-wise, it's just as intense and just as...
Kind of like Ninja Assassin, where it's like just apeshit crazy, yeah, it's badass
it's
action.
It's that kind of level.
Yeah.
It stars Joe Taslim, who's a great martial artist, and of course has Eco Uwais from the Raid films. He's in it too. And just an action-packed film that you can watch along with us on Netflix, The Night Comes for Us. And I've seen it a couple of times, and but it's been a while since I've watched it, because it's one of those movies I watched twice when it first came out, because it's subtitled. And sometimes you don't pick up on things. So I watched it a couple of times.
And yeah, you look away for a second. Yeah. Like, what did they just say?
So I'm going to rewatch it this week and get ready for this. And so it should be fun. I'm looking forward to talking about it next week on the show. But until then, the RebelRadioPodcast.com for all your Rebel Radio needs. And you can find us on all the awesome apps, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Podbean, Apple Podcasts, and a few others, Amazon Music. We're actually
Amazon
on there.
Music, wow.
Which is cool. So, man, we're trendy as fuck, me and all the apps.
Dude. We're huge in Japan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. One listener.
One listener.
I don't know. I actually haven't looked at those metrics. I can get metrics in different countries that looked at us. I haven't looked in a while.
That's cool.
I mean, I know we had U.S., Canada, and Europe, obviously, but I haven't looked at the country metrics in a while.
I think there is one Austrian person.
Yes.
And it could be Arnold.
It could be.
It could be.
Yes, Austria just pop up on the metrics, and it's pretty consistent. Like, every month there's a listen from Austria. So, Arnold, if you're listening... Well, he lives in California, though.
Look, don't kill my hope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But thank you, as always, for listening. We appreciate it. This has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
Until next time, remember, as always, just
go there and do it.